My next guest today is Jonathan Doyle. Jonathan Doyle is an entrepreneur, businessman, and author of the book, Bridging the Gap, 8 Ideas to Change Your Life. He's also a coach and has spoken all over the world to over 300,000 people on peak performance, relationships, motivation, and finding their purpose. He has built and sold successful businesses, worked with elite sporting teams, and now coaches and executives and leaders around the world in peak performance and personal transformation. He holds a master's degree in leadership and management and is currently completing further graduate studies in philosophy and human relationships. He's an obsessive road cyclist and is married to his wife, Karen, and is a father to 3 young children. I am so excited to have this guy on to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is on peak performance, motivation, how to stay focused, and how to find your purpose. This is like, I love this topic of finding your purpose, prioritizing your purpose, making stuff happen. And so I cannot wait to share Jonathan Doyle with all of you. He came onto my radar through another podcast, The School of Self-Mastery with Adrienne Dorison. She interviewed him and I just love what he had to say. And I just was like, I have to have him on my podcast too, because he has so much to share and so much knowledge. And so I'm really, really excited to introduce you to Jonathan Doyle. Jonathan, thank you so much for taking the time to be here on this podcast and allow us to have a conversation. I know that, you know, you're a busy guy, and out of all the time spent, and time is really precious, and of all the podcasts and interviews and speaking things that you do, you've chosen to take the time to be here, and I do not take that for lightly or for granted. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here.
Amy, awesome to be here. Totally pumped. Haven't had a lot of sleep, busy couple of days, but honestly, stoked to be here. Love what you're doing. And, you know, and as I've followed your stuff on social, and honestly, my sense has been, I just love getting behind people like you who are serving people out there, building businesses and doing that stuff. So honestly, hopefully people can hear it in my tonality. I'm really honored to be here, and I hope I can be helpful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have to tell you, I've been following you as well. And I'm excited to talk to you today about something that I'm really, really passionate about and you're an expert at, which is liberating people's potential, peak performance. Like, I can't wait to kind of dive into this with you. And I became kind of a, just for the listening audience, I became a fan of yours back in March when I heard Adrienne Dorison's interview with you talk about this topic, talk about your growth and your journey and kind of your roots, where you came from, the businesses that you've started, and just your life, you know, your life journey. I was just really fascinated by the level of achievement that you have done and your daily success habits and all this stuff. So I've been following you for a while, and I'm really excited to kind of dive into this whole topic today for the audience.
Awesome, Amy. And when you mentioned following me, I don't know, I've just been sold on Snapchat. So I follow Gary Vaynerchuk very closely. And last night I'm on Snapchat, and my wife Karen and I have date night every, well, it was Tuesday last night. We try and go once a week. And I took a photo for Snapchat, and I was trying to add it to my story. And you had just messaged me, or you just followed me, and I followed you back. And I accidentally sent that photo straight to you, which is okay, but I'm like, Amy's going to be like, that's so random. Jonathan's just like, we don't know each other. We've only just connected, and he's sending me photos of him and his wife on date night. I'm going, and I had the babysitter here, and I said, oh, let's get this photo to Amy. So forgive my social media. But,
I saw that. I love it.
I just started to figure it all out. I made a decision that my father, back, believe it or not, in the 1980s, He always struggled work-wise, but he had a love for computers when they first came out, and he never invested in it and he never followed it. And with social media, I'm like, okay, I'm not 19. I'm not a digital native, but I love playing with that stuff and starting to really use it. So excuse me for sending rant marriage photos to you.
It's okay. I was like, wait a minute, does his wife have a face? Like, why is her back to me? I was like, have all these.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that's funny because she hates social media, and I'm not going to be realistic, and I'm not going to say all women are like this. She wanted to look great, and she's gone, I haven't done my hair. And I said, okay, we'll just do it around. So anyway.
No, it was really cute. And the funny thing is, you know, I'm a Snapchat filter junkie. I don't know why I find it so entertaining. It takes like 2 seconds, but I just find it so entertaining. I'm like, what's the Snapchat filter for today? You know, it's just kind of funny. So starting to get into the whole Snapchat thing as well. I know. So funny.
It's so powerful. I spoke on the West Coast the other day, and I had maybe 200 people in the room, and I walked out of there, and like, I just, the follower was huge. This is native for people, like especially younger people. They're just really gravitating to it. And I can see how this stuff's going to be increasingly replacing email and just, so yeah, I'm just leveraging it. And, you know, I guess my rock bottom principle is that pretty much anything that goes on there has to be useful to people.
Right.
From a business perspective, like sending people photos of your coffee. If I see another photo of someone's coffee, I'm jumping off a bridge. I'm like, add value to my life. Unless you're a personal friend, add value.
I know.
It's about adding value. So that's my rant on social media.
Oh my gosh. I know exactly what you mean. And I even ask myself sometimes, like, is this adding anything to anybody? You know what I mean? Before I post it, that's my filter. That's my question to myself, you know? So, 100%. So I would love to, I mean, this, so to switch gears, because I could talk about that all day and we could just have a fun conversation about that, but I want to switch gears and talk about, the concept of this podcast is really because I truly believe that every single thing that we have, whether it's tangible or whether it's an idea or even like, you know, launching something to the moon, I mean, everything starts with an idea, concept. And then kind of like, not that it ends with once you make money, you're done. Cause I think life is a journey and life is a process, but I would love for you to kind of tell people a little bit about your journey, like how you kind of started and kind of the transitions that you've kind of came and sort of, I know you started Choices Media. I would love to hear kind of how that idea that you had, how that idea turned into an actual profitable business and like your journey with that.
Okay. So in its practical essence, like how it became a profitable business in terms of business mechanics, which is good for everybody to understand, was classic business stuff. It was identifying a niche and solving a problem. So I'm speaking at a big conference next Friday and I'm just going to hammer people because we all forget it. And I forget this, that if you are not solving problems, if you're not identifying and solving problems, then what you have is a hobby. And your hobby is eventually, if you try and turn your hobby to a business and you're not solving problems, you're going to go broke. So we came from an education background, or I came from an education background, and we knew that there were particular niche gaps in the curriculum areas. So there were areas that the problem we were solving was that they were difficult topics. It was around relationships and areas like, you know, a lot of young guys were getting internet addicted and getting up to all sorts of stuff. And we developed content in the area of relationships and, you know, helping young people make better choices and become better people, because a lot of it was difficult for schools to deal with. It wasn't core business. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of schools just wanted to make sure they could demonstrate to parents that they had good, you know, good scores and prepping people for, I guess, what you'd call your SATs. And so there was this other important area that schools were finding it difficult to deal with. So we niched in, and you know, if anybody not familiar with that concept, it's just you identify a sub area. Like there's a famous saying, you know, that there's always room for anybody who can invent a better mousetrap. So, it, you know, sometimes there's things that have been there for a while, but you can do it better or add more value. Mm-hmm. So we did that first and we built that and we sort of just grew and the other important thing was that we looked at where the technology was heading. So when we started, we were DVD based, we were printing manuals, and then very quickly we moved to online delivery, and now for one of our programs is 400 schools around the world, online content. It's just a really simple model. So that's the education side of the business, and then I branched into this other area of doing a lot of conference work and peak performance, and I just get fascinated by where people get stuck and helping people get stuck. And you know, my last introductory rant when you and I talked before, simply to say, for anybody listening that's got a business, thinking about a business or growing a business, business is awesome, and small businesses are just the absolute engine of our economies and our cultures. And I want to remind you that what you're doing is a good thing. You know, as long as you're not, you know, selling, you know, flammable liquids to five-year-olds or something, but as long as you're in the ballpark of a morally appropriate product, it's really good stuff, and I believe in it. And I think that the more we can help people to care about their business and get good at it, and you know, so that's, yeah, I'm just passionate about it, and I want to encourage people to say keep going. And and just related to that, and Amy, cut me off at any time because I'll just rant for hours. But what I've also realized more is that business is far more of a science than I once thought. I thought business was about talent, and that if you had a great idea and you were talented, and we're sold that now because we see the Zuckerbergs, we see the crazy stuff, and we go, oh, these are just hyper-talented Ivy League kids. That's not true. There's a really good book at the moment for people called Game of Inches, which has just come out. And Game of Inches just reminded me, I was on a flight the other day, of the science of business. Of if you identify a problem in a niche, and then you identify how to do it, and then you execute and execute and execute, you're going to be okay. And I want to take the pressure off people to stop thinking that they have to be, you know, they have to be a Zuckerberg. They don't. They've just got to have a good idea and then work really hard.
I love that. Oh my gosh, I love that. And I'm going to put that Game of Inches, the link in the show notes for people to kind of research that book if they want to go ahead and get it. So I think that's great. What would you say to someone? And this has got me curious now. What would you say to someone who, because you know, I work with people too, then they think they have the latest and greatest, like best idea of like how to reinvent like the paperclip. Like, oh my God, I've got this great idea. I mean, I'm just being silly, but I've got this great idea. And what would you say to someone who thinks they have the latest and greatest, like best idea? What advice would you give to them when they have an idea? Like, is it really a good idea? Is it something I should spend time developing? Is there a need? Like, what would you say to someone that's listening?
Two things. The first thing is I'd ask people to consider, and this could sound a bit sort of Jedi, but we have to first ask ourselves, are there any, well, this is a paradox, are there any great new ideas? In a way, yes. Like, you look at something like Uber, and you go, how did we all miss that? Yeah. Well, we yes. missed it because we had to wait until technology caught up with a very basic thing about capitalism, which capitalism ideally creates markets that unite buyers and sellers. Mm-hmm. So we had all this capacity, which was people who can drive a car. And we had all this extra need or desire, which was people that wanted cheaper transport, and technology put it together. I'm saying that because it's rare to kind of come up with something that's utterly groundbreaking that no human being has thought of. So we don't have to invent the next greatest thing. You may do it. So you could be listening to me now going, but I've got this amazing idea. And I go, okay, cool. The next thing you do is do something that I never did. And I'm putting my hand up and go, there are two ways to learn in life. You can learn from other people's mistakes or your own. And it's much cheaper to learn from other people.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is test. I was convinced that we knew our niche, we had the best ideas, we were doing stuff other people weren't doing, so we just went for it. What I'm doing now is I've become a lot more mature in the journey of business, and I've been hammered a lot of times and things have failed and we've rebuilt. Test. I don't care how you test, but you've got to test, which means we're about to release, you know, I used to do a seminar on 7 key principles in the education space. We think it's going to make a good physical print product. but we're going to spend a little bit of money on the design work, and then we're going to go to digital, we're going to have an order form, and we're going to push it to the existing market before we print, because the money, the real cost is there. So I want to know before I do it, is there any interest here? Mm-hmm. So whatever your idea is listening to this, you have to find some way to test it. Preferably something a bit more than saying to a couple of friends, hey, I've developed this mousetrap, would you buy it? You've got to go to a market of people. Like, yeah. Preferably you're better off asking people that have a rat infestation, because they're your ideal customer, right? So they're the kind of people who are going to go, well, tell me about your mousetrap. What's it like? How's it different? So please, if you're sitting there with an idea, I want to encourage you, and I want to say to you, find a way to test it. Jump on Fiverr. Get someone to mock it up for you. Get it designed. Get it tested. But, you know, you want some feedback before you pull the trigger.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because I did an entire podcast episode about pre-validating. It was just a content only, like pre-validating your idea and giving the audience just some ways to, like, you know, questions to ask, how to pre-validate an idea, what to do, kind of. And it goes back to what you just said about testing your idea. Like, that is actually I'm raising my hand too, you know, one of my biggest mistakes that I've made. And so I love that you kind of said that, and you're raising your hand too. Like, I've been there and done that. I've thought I've had this great thing, and I've launched it, and it's failed. So I love that you said that.
Oh yeah. And it's soul destroying, because we identify with what we build. And then often early in the business phase, when you're younger, you're like, everyone hates me. It's like,
right.
And the next thing you know, you're sitting in the bar at the bottom of a bottle of Jack Daniels going, what did I do? But I think if we identify what we create, and that's part of the creative process. So if we build something awesome, then we're very invested. Mm-hmm. And part of the maturity of business, and this is stuff that I'm learning, is the maturity of business is to go, this is good, this is congruent, this is in keeping with what I'm doing in the world. Let's get some feedback on it. And so that's a really big first step. And I was reminded of that in that Game of Inches book. It was like, how did I miss that?
Yeah.
It's good to be reminded.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, when we develop something that's ourselves as entrepreneurs, we put our heart and soul into it, right? It's like, you can't separate, you know, I truly believe we can't separate ourselves from our businesses. It's like, it's enmeshed. It's like our soul and our heart and everything we put in, blood, sweat, and tears. And so when it doesn't work out, that's when we feel like, oh, you know, wah, wah, I'm a big failure. And you start to kind of think, again, like, oh, what did I do wrong? Or what did you start to kind of internalize that, right?
100%. And I really want to get people to think, and I'm a huge fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, because he's like, hey, a whole bunch of you should go and work, you know, in a good company and get paid and not be entrepreneurs. He said, you've got to know if this is in your DNA.
Right.
This stuff's in your DNA. Because you're going to get these knockbacks, you're going to get these failures, and you want to be ready for them.
Right. And I which leads me into the next topic I really want to talk to you about, which is, I'm sure, something that is you're passionate about when it comes to liberating people's potential and peak performance, which is failure. So I want to talk about that for just a second, because I really believe that there's sort of no such thing as failure in my mind, because I always think of it like it's whatever I quote unquote failed at was a learning experience for me. It was an opportunity for me to grow. Where people get stuck, and I want to hear your take on this, but where I see people getting stuck is the questions that they ask themselves when they fail. So questions like, why didn't this work? And maybe I'm not cut out for this stuff. And maybe I did something wrong. And what did I do wrong? And why didn't this work? Instead of asking themselves these questions like, you know, what can I learn from this? How can I make it better? Who can I reach out to for help? Who can I ask for feedback? Like, things like that. So shifting the questions, shifting the internal dialogue. So I want to hear your take and what you think about the word failure, and maybe talk about maybe one of your own failures and what you learned from it.
Of course, I've never failed, Amy. I just have got nothing to say. I can't imagine what you mean. Do you mean failures today? Okay. Firstly, I've always loved, Tony Robbins does this great thing on one of his recordings where he's like, what you're identifying, Amy, is absolutely perfect. You're spot on. It's about questions. So Tony Robbins says, if you ask your brain a dumb question, it is going to serve you up a beautiful dumb answer. He's like, you know, if you ask your brain, why did I put on weight or why did I eat too much, your brain will go, because you're a pig. Like, if you ask a stupid question, there's a part of you that'll go, oh yeah, you ready? Here's why. So you are so right. The first thing, and this is what I learned, I did a couple of master's degrees and then I moved into further qualifications now in executive coaching and peak performance, and it's all about questions. I mean, I after all these years have been amazed at the power of learning how to ask great questions. And we call them open questions. So if you ask a closed question, it's like a yes, no question. Did I fail because I didn't work hard enough? Your brain's probably going to go yes or no.
So right.
You are spot on. We start with open questions. What is the message here? What am I learning? All that stuff. When I wrote my second book, I wrote a whole chapter on failure. And the basic principle was just this simple idea that failure is feedback. Failure is feedback. Failure is feedback. That's called a reframe. It's a classic reframe. So most people have a failure and they will self-identify. I am the failure. I failed. I did X. Henry Ford famously said that, you know, failure is simply an opportunity to begin again more intelligently.
Mm.
You know, I've always loved that quote. So it's a reframe. It's okay. What did I do? This is what I get back to the science of business, the part that I missed, was business is neutral. It operates under certain laws. As we move away from that talent, pure talent paradigm, we go, this was the input. This is what I did. This is the result that I got. It's feedback. So, and again, if you look at a Tony Robbins sort of model, all you do is change your approach. So you keep changing and changing until you get the result. And I teach this to people all the time. People get so fixed and so stuck that, well, there's only one way to fix this. There's only one way to do this, but be psychologically flexible and just take it as feedback. And I'm a huge journaler, so I write all the time. And often the process of journaling will uncover stuff for people. Just having a nice notebook and writing down what happened. And yes, we're going to feel it at times, but you know, it's a bit like an NFL footballer. You know, the first few times they get really belted, they're going to feel that. But, you know, when a guy's been playing for 10 years, he doesn't, you know, they're not crying after getting hit, right? They're like, you get hit. This is what happens. And then you learn, you get feedback, you watch the tape, mm-hmm. you get coaching, and you don't make this, you try not to make the same failure or the same mistake. You know, you just, what's the other quote? You know, it's okay to make mistakes, but just try and make new ones.
Right.
That's crucial. Make new ones. Make as many as you want. When I was on the West Coast, I had 200 young leaders in there, and I'm saying to them, they have been deeply socialized into not failing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a massive paradigm shift to say to people, mm-hmm. hell no, go and fail. Don't be stupid about it. Don't be flippant. But just start and begin and do the testing, be scientific. But then when it fails, it's like, you know, back to Edison, you know, the whole 5,000 attempts on the light bulb, you know, and I've just demonstrated 5,000 attempts that don't work, and I'm one step closer to the one that will. So you've just got to take the reframe, be in control of the narrative. But the only way you'll do that, Amy, really, is if it's in your DNA and you care enough about why you're in business. And this is what I'll be speaking at this conference next week, is saying to people, if you cannot connect that fundamental, deep reason you are doing this, you will eventually, the failures will eventually take you out. So you've always, what I say to business people is, why the hell are you doing this? Why aren't you going to get some security in a 9-to-5 that might just pay the bills? Keep coming back to the why. Because once you know why you do this, then the failures can be much more sustainable. And the last thing is, if it helps people, I have had two or three occasions over the last decade where I was convinced it was over. And I've been like, once Karen walked into my office and she just looked at me in a way that only a spouse can know, she's like, oh God, what's wrong? And I remember looking up at her saying to her, Kaz, it's over, we're done. Early in our business life. And we weren't. We somehow, we got out. But so if it's, you know, just I want to encourage people to remember that I've been there, and you fight your way out and it works out.
I love that you said that, and what you're, you know, what you're talking about, what comes to mind is really, you know, your why or your purpose or your mission. So I would love for you to talk about that. And that was one thing that, one area that I heard you talk about with Adrian, and was really fascinated by this, the idea about the purpose and your assignment in life. And I would love for you to share with the listeners too, your, you know, teaching about that and like finding your purpose. How do you do that if you're feeling kind of lost? You know, there might be someone listening that's feeling kind of like, I don't even know what my purpose is. So if you could talk about that, I would love to hear it.
100%. So first principle would be to say that I genuinely believe that all of us are here to essentially do one major thing. It will manifest differently at different points in time. And what I'll do, Amy, is I'll give you a link to an amazing podcast that, from a guy that worked with John Maxwell. He frames it beautifully. He talks about calling, three things: calling, assignment, and one other one. So calling always stays the same, the core calling. But then it's vocation, which is where you're living that calling out, and then assignment, which is the particular way you're doing it at any given moment in your life. So 15 years ago, I was teaching in high school when I first, you know, was just starting out. So my desire to liberate people's potential was present then. My calling was present then. But I was living it through the vocation of teaching, and my assignment was coaching a particular group of young people. Now look at me now, right? So we're 15, 20 years down the track. Has my calling changed? No. My you can hear it in my voice. I am trying to reach through this microphone to encourage people, your listeners who I'll never meet, for some reason it's in me. My purpose is to liberate their potential and encourage them. My vocation now is as a business person, as an entrepreneur. My assignment right now is to do this podcast. So I want people to understand that they kind of think, well, I'm supposed to be a postal worker in Nepal, or, you know, my purpose is to sweep streets. You know, they get very fixed and they go, no, you want to stay at the level and watch the big picture. Right. Key points on purpose. It's almost for everybody always been there. It's pretty rare. Suddenly at 35 go, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to be a cellist at Carnegie Hall. Like, and you've never touched a cello. I mean, possible, but unlikely. Mm-hmm. I used to do puppet shows at 5, and I demanded that people sit in front in the lounge room and watch me do my puppet shows. And then I was in primary school doing drama, and then I did more drama, and then I was a speaker on stage. It's not rocket science. The skill set was always there. So I asked people to say, what have you always been good at? What has always been natural for you? And so that's the concept, is that it's always been there. And I want to remind people that the higher level of purpose will always be invested in serving other people and bringing something into the world. That's the highest level of purpose. Mm-hmm. So if people are like, where business gets hard is where people are like, I've got to just make a bucket of money and then I'm going to be happy. God, I could save people so much time. It's not true. Now, if you're broke, being broke is miserable. Brian Tracy says beautifully, the best way to help the poor is by not being one of them. Right. So there is no glory in poverty. There is no glory in being stressed out. We all know that. But if any of us think that we are going to buy that Maserati, we're going to get that, you know, house on Jupiter Island, and everything's going to be great, you are profoundly mistaken. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, your life is about the high level of purpose, which is how do you bring these gifts and talents you have, and they could be just business skills or creative skills, mm-hmm. and eventually create something that serves other people. And I think the final point is that I'm the son of a man who lived his entire life with terrible depression, grossly unhappy, hated his work. And so I'm classically one of those people who is immersed in that and swung out the other side. Mm-hmm. So I want to encourage your listeners that you're modeling for the next generation. If you have children, you're modeling stuff and model for them somebody who's passionate about finding out. Get hungry about the search. Yeah. You know, ask questions. Why am I here? What brings me joy? What am I always good at? So, so that's where I'm at is I'm just, you know, the last one is Wayne Dyer used to say, get off outcome, stay on purpose. Mm. I don't get anxious on stage much anymore, because for years I desperately wanted everybody to like me. I wanted to do an amazing job, and I was focused on outcome. Did enough people clap? Did enough people follow me on social? Did enough people tell me I was wonderful? And that's ego-based, and you can never win that. But trust me, I'm stupid enough to have spent years doing that. But now it's like, you don't get nervous. When you want to serve people, you don't get nervous. And I just want to get on stage and go, hey, how can I help you grow? And then that's purpose level. So that's another huge rant on purpose. So there you go.
I love it. And I love, you had talked about something about just kind of like looking for the fingerprints in your life. And it's funny because I call them like breadcrumbs, like just follow the breadcrumbs in your life. Like if anybody's, you know, read that story or familiar with the story of Hansel and Gretel, it's like you just follow the breadcrumbs. You know, you kind of like just, if you pay attention to the context clues that your life has given you, and even if you wake up, like even if you're like, because this happened to me a couple of years ago where I just woke up and I was like, what am I doing here? Like, what am I doing in this life? Even if you wake up and you're in your late 30s or you're in your 40s or you're in your 50s or 60s, it doesn't matter. However old you are, and if you wake up and you're like, why am I here? I started to just kind of investigate, well, wait a minute. When was I my happiest? I started asking myself this question and getting curious about when was I my happiest and what was I doing and who was I with at the time? What exactly was I doing? And I kind of traced it back and I was like, well, you know, as far back I can remember when I was 18, you know, this happened and that happened. And then wait a minute, but I'm telling myself I wasn't happy until I was 18. Let me think about this a little more and a little more, a little more. And I realized, like, oh my goodness, ever since I was like 4 or 5 years old, this is kind of a funny personal story. I'll share this with you really quickly, not to digress, but, when I was about 4 or 5 years old, my grandparents had an 80 acre farm. And my grandmother sort of, she kind of helped raise me. And so I would spend a lot of time on the farm. And we had this little, like, almost like a, we called it like a little well house. It was like basically the size of a dog house. But when you're 4 or 5 years old, it's hard to climb up. And I would climb up on top of it. And I would stand on top of it and just pretend like I was speaking to the entire world. And I would just spend hours out there just talking to people. And my grandmother, she would kind of joke around like, oh, Amy, you're going to be a preacher someday. Because she was very Christian and like, you're just going to be a preacher someday. You're going to be a preacher someday. And it's so funny, a couple of years ago when I went through this, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing with my life anymore, and went through this process, I realized, oh my gosh, this has been in me all along. I just have to tap back into that. I've spent most of my life kind of like walking around on autopilot, not really tapping into that person. And now that I am tapped into that person, I'm like, oh, how can I speak? And I want to do the podcast and I want to do more speaking. And because I'd spent the time with myself, and I know you talk about this, and I know you're a big advocate of spending some quiet time with yourself to kind of figure these things out, right?
Amy, you've said so much there. Like, most of our culture is deeply sleepwalking through life.
Yeah.
History where there is just vast, vast opportunities for self-medication, numbing behaviors, and disengagement.
Yeah.
So we just got born. It's the paradox of the awesomeness of technology and the other side of it. Listening to you then, it's like, yes, and I'm watching you emerge on social. And 2 points. First, I'll do the nicer one first. Whatever spiritual tradition people have listening to this, or they don't have one, there's a long spiritual metaphysical concept that if we begin to seek purpose and meaning and contribution, God, the universe, however people want to conceive that, I don't want to upset anybody, but it moves with us. Like, there's a beautiful, I mean, from a Christian perspective, and I know everybody's different, but there's one moment where Jesus goes, you know, if a child asked a father for bread, which father would say, here's a rock? Like, he said, you know, if you know how
to, yeah,
won't the universe, God, cooperate and give you good stuff? So you start from this idea that whatever people's spiritual paradigm is, once you get conscious, once you get active, it's not as if the universe goes, no, sorry, I'm hiding this. No, go back to Facebook and tune out because we're going to hide this. No, it doesn't work that way. There's something about waking up. When you begin to wake up, and that's why I said metaphysical, because a lot of, you know, agnostic or atheist philosophers have said similar sorts of things, that once you begin to pursue and seek, things begin to move. So I want to say to everybody, don't be passive. Don't just sleep through another season of House of Cards. Like, become a partner in your own life. You know, become a player in your own drama. And the other thing is, I had another brilliant point. I hate when I lose my other brilliant point. Oh, yeah. Just because you discover purpose, this is the other one, right? It's like fairies and unicorns. It's like, oh, I've discovered my purpose. Now the universe will shower upon me riches and blessings. It's like, no. Again, from a parenting perspective, if your child has a talent, you don't say to your child, oh, cool, you got a talent. Good luck with that. Like, they have to have an environment where the talent is stretched. And this is new for me. This is like, if you have a purpose, I spent years in the talent paradigm because I had a talent, and I've been really helped recently to realize that once you find purpose and talent and your gifting, then the work starts. And that's what the bots that people aren't making. They're going, oh, well, I found my purpose. It should all be easy. No, it may not be any. It may get a whole bunch harder. And I want to encourage people. My current absolute favorite stuff is Angela Duckworth's book, Grit, which has just revolutionized my thinking because she explodes a lot of Harvard research, the talent myth. And there is a bucket of research now about perseverance and work and stickability. So you get people, you know, watching you come out on social and emerge and begin to do more video on Instagram. And I'm like, what you and I have to do now is grind and just grit and hustle and produce. Yep. Because it's one thing to have the purpose and the gifting, but it's another now to do the work to bring that to the world.
Right. So we can't sit back on our couch and just like vibe it in or anything like that.
No, it's the Zuckerberg myth. It's like, I've got an app. And this is where I encourage people, watch some of Gary Vaynerchuk's rants.
I love him.
He's amazing. He's the most authentic. I mean, I'm big on, he is the most authentic and self-convinced person I've seen in ages. He's like, build real businesses. You know, you don't have a business because you've got venture capital. You don't have a business. You've got venture capital.
Right.
So he's huge on this. Take the concept, take the purpose and the passion, but then do the work to build something really cool.
Right. Take action.
Yeah. And look, Americans especially, like I was over there twice last year. I mean, I freaking love that spirit that's in you guys. It's like you just got that hustle, that entrepreneurial spirit that many countries don't have. So, you know, if you're listening to this in the States, you have no excuse.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Amen to that. I'm so glad you brought up the word grit because this sort of leads into my next question to you, which I'm really excited to talk about. And I made a personal shift in sort of my messaging. Like what is my purpose? And one of the things that has come to light for me is this concept of relentless resilience in life. Yeah. You can call it grit, you could call it perseverance, whatever you want to call it. I think for me, I'm calling it relentless resilience because to me, throughout my life, people have said, oh, you're really determined. And I was like, let me really examine this. And so the word resilience speaks to me because it's this idea of kind of bouncing back after maybe you've been squashed down. So I want to talk to you about what does this idea of relentless resilience mean to you, and what advice would you give someone to kind of help create that in their life?
The first point is that when it comes to things like resilience, I remind people that whether you like it or not, life is going to give you an endless number of opportunities to practice. So, you know, I love that, you know, we're sitting on the couch and vibing it, right? I love that we did that. It's like life is going to continue to be at times very difficult. There'll be a lot of seasons of joy and a lot of great stuff, but it's going to be difficult. So the first thing is to come to a mature realization that it's hard. Mm-hmm. And again, I want to be humble and say to people, I'm still getting it. I'm still going, no, the magic fairy dust doesn't fall into your lap. It's going to be really hard. Coming from what I came from, so, you know, my background, coming from a background of abuse and trauma and a whole bunch of craziness, I often say to audiences that people like me do one of two things. You either stick a needle in your arm at 17 or you decide to get even. Mm-hmm. And something in me was like, you know what, screw it. I refuse to perpetuate this cycle. I refuse to... So deep in me is a desire not to repeat the generational pattern. So I have a why. I have it when it comes to relentless resilience. I have a kind of why. Without that deep knowing of why something matters to you, resilience becomes very difficult. One way to think about this is a lot of experiments have been done about locus of control stuff. So the famous experiments are, when they tested rats, and the rats would get little electric shocks, and there were two kinds of experiment. One, there was nothing they could do to stop themselves being shocked. In the other experiment, they could do certain actions and stop it. The ones that could do nothing pretty much just curled up and quit and gave up. And there's a whole bunch of research on locus of control, which if people aren't familiar with it, it means where do we locate our sense of control. So an external locus of control means that you think that everything outside you happens to you and you're a victim of circumstance. Now, people don't go around saying, oh, I'm just a victim of circumstance, but my God, they behave like it. And they're negative and they blame and they pull people down and they're depressed and miserable. An internalized locus of control is this belief that no matter what happens, there's something you can do. Mm-hmm. Even if you lose your house, even if you go broke, even if your first business fails. There's this, so you have to have a reason. Once you have, so I guess there's two components. There's the energy source for resilience is your deep abiding reason. Mm-hmm. And until you have that, so next week I'm speaking to a big franchise conference. Now there'll be some people there who are running multiple franchises making a bucket of money. And there'll be people there running a very small franchise making a little bit of money. And I'm going to be at them going, find your reason. If you're not making a lot of money, but you need to do this to buy your children's school uniforms, well, that can be an incredibly compelling reason and to build your resilience capacity. So first thing is to really get people to get out a journal. Why am I doing this? What is important enough about the why that when things get rough, I'll keep going? And so that's it. And locating the locus of control internally, which just means no matter what happens to you, no matter what happens to you, there is always something you can do. And if people haven't read it, the seminal book on that is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl's imprisoned in Auschwitz. His wife is executed. His parents are killed. He's a psychiatrist. He survives Auschwitz. He comes out 10 days after he got out. He sat down and wrote a phenomenal book. And his simple principle was there were two kinds of people in Auschwitz. One group of people could find absolutely no meaning in what was happening, and they died quickly. They committed suicide. They died of starvation. They literally, some of them just sat down and died. They just died on the spot. They gave up. And he said there was a small subset of people who could find meaning in the hardship, who could find some kind of purpose. So for him, he said, the reason I'm here, the reason this is terrible is I will get out of this place and I will tell the world about it. Mm-hmm. And I am here, the universe placed me here to be a witness to this and then communicate it. So relentless resilience comes from those two factors, your why, and from knowing that no matter what happens, you can choose the meaning, mm-hmm. and then you can choose the response. And a lot of people don't want that level of responsibility. It's much easier to go, it's my parents, or it's the economy, or it's this. Sorry, friends. There are a lot of people that make a bucket of money in bad economies, and there are lots of people with bad parents that made something of their lives. So own your stuff, find your reason, and know you can always act.
Oh my gosh, there is so much there that you just said. It's like amazing. And I love that you mentioned the word choice. I posted something on Instagram today about choice. I'm like, we're totally on the same wavelength with that. So yeah, oh my gosh, like so many takeaways for the listeners on that. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. That was Amazing. Amazing. Totally switching gears. I have a total personal question for you that I've been really, really intrigued by. And you're like, you're probably sitting there thinking, oh God, what is she going to ask me now?
it's not another question. Why do I look so much like George Clooney? I'm so sick of that question.
Oh my gosh. No, what I want to ask you is, you are an avid reader. I know that about you. I'm following you. You're an avid reader. You're also, you're a teacher by nature because you're out there, you're giving, you're talking, you're teaching. And you're also a dad and a husband, and you're juggling all these things, and you get up at 4 a.m. to work out and do your morning routine. And you're right, you're a writer. So one of my kind of like intriguing curiosity questions, because it's quite honestly, it's something that I sort of like struggle with a little bit. So, which is, you know, when I was writing my book, I was totally in this like writer, like creative mode, and book just kind of came, and I was like, I gotta write. And I found that during those times, it was really hard for me to read. Like I couldn't read and write. Like my brain was like, it was like one or the other. So I'm kind of curious, like, how do you kind of balance the reading and the writing and being a dad? And balance could be a whole other podcast topic in and of itself, because I just don't even really think that exists. But I want to hear, how do you read and write at the same time? I guess. I don't know how else to ask that.
Yeah,
I know it sounds weird.
Interesting. But... That's a great question. A few thoughts. Firstly, Tony Robbins used to have a thing called net time, no extra time. So in terms of me consuming content, now whether that's reading or podcast content, I like the principle, firstly, of no extra time, which is simply where can I take information in a way that doesn't force me to be saying no to everything else. Now, example is, here in my office, because I'm an obsessive road cyclist, I've got a very fancy trainer set up. I'll have my iPad there, and I select a whole bunch of great video content to watch. I've got a special training computer. Anyway, what I do is, when I'm doing some of that indoor training, if the weather's bad, I'm consuming tons of great content. So the first thing I do is try and go, right, wherever I am, is there a way that I can use this time effectively to, you know, take in more content? And the reason I take in more content is honestly because the more I take in and consume and think about, the more I can give back, which puts me back in the purpose of liberating people's potential. When I travel, so when I'm on a plane, I'm embarrassing. I like literally sit on the seat, put headphones in, grab a pen, grab a book. Before the plane even takes off, I'm in the zone. Sometimes I'll try and read an entire book before it lands. So I'm here, I'm using this time. So I want to use those times effectively. So that's one thing. The broader balance question, a couple of thoughts. There's a great book called The One Thing by a guy in the US. I think he built the biggest company in the US. The One Thing, great book. It's really about, simply about identifying in any given day, what are the things that really have to happen? Mm-hmm. So you have your non-negotiables. Stephen Covey would talk about roles and goals. So I'm like, okay, how do I be an effective father? I put a lot of weight on spirituality and meditation. So those things have to happen. They're non-negotiables for me. They go in. Amy, like you, I find the reading hard. I love to read. I've got so many great books. What I will say to people is environment can be really helpful. So when I have to read, I will go to a library. I'm a believer that some of the things we do are always done best in certain environments. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't train well in home gyms. You know, they go and buy all the equipment, and then, you know, someone's cooking donuts upstairs and the smell comes down. So I'm like, you go to a great gym, the environment tells you how to conduct yourself. I read in libraries. So I've got an app called Simply Noise. I put that app on, which is this beautiful white noise background, and I lock myself in there and push through. Broader balance question is the question. Vaynerchuk talks about communication. He just says there's relentless communication with his own wife about what we do. I don't think anybody ever gets it right. It doesn't exist.
I agree. It doesn't.
You have seasons. No. You just have seasons where you've got to hustle much harder, and often I say to people at conferences, and I don't know if I invented this saying, but I'll just pretend I did so I sound really smart. It's called wherever you are, be all there.
Mm.
So if you're with people, be present. If you're reading, be present to that. Discipline, there's no shortcuts. You got to show up and be disciplined sometimes and get it done. The other good thing with reading is if anybody is into consuming content, it's really worthwhile thinking about re-communicating what you're learning. So I'm constantly using what I read for social stuff, Instagram posts, podcasts, video that I do. So if someone's in a business and you're learning stuff, just ask yourself, underline stuff, take some notes, post it on social media, share that stuff. Because often if you're teaching it or posting it, it's a really good way to learn it. So Amy, I'm not sure your question, I've answered it.
That's great.
Look, I'll just say to you this, Amy, if you're writing, be all there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're reading, be all there. Just you probably can't execute on both effectively.
Mm-mm.
So just nail whichever one you're doing.
Okay, good. So I did that right. So
I guess yes.
I did that right.
Yes.
Yeah, because right. I was like in this zone of writing. I'm like, I just have to write. I can't consume content while I was writing. It was just,
yeah.
My brain wasn't working that way. So,
it might just be left right. But hey, when the energy shows up and says to you, write,
You just write. So where can people find you is my next question.
Look, you'll probably post some stuff in the show notes.
I will.
The easiest way for Facebook people, the URL, www.fb, Jonathan.com, fbjonathan.com, puts people straight to my Facebook page. It links through. Instagram, jonathan_doyle.co. Snapchat, Jonathan Doyle Co, one word. And then there's the website itself, which is jonathandoyle.co.co. So there's a few places. You'll find me on YouTube. But my weapons of choice at the moment are pretty much the Facebook page at fbjonathan.com, Instagram and Snapchat. Well, they can just email me. Like if somebody wants to email me, just email me at jonathan@jonathandoyle.co. And,
great.
Chat.
Yeah. I will just for the listeners, I will post all the references to all the books that we talked about and the podcast, the other podcast interviews we talked about, those will all be in the show notes. And I just, before we end, I just want to say a huge, huge thank you for being here. I'm so honored to have you here. It's been such a great conversation, getting to know you a little bit more. And I can't wait to see your direction and where you're going and following you continually. And so I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here and really, really appreciate it.
Amy, really stoked, really humbled to be invited. When I see someone like you who's starting to build and is just bringing good stuff, I just want to get behind it. So I want to see your audience grow and just keep doing what you're doing. And when it gets hard, just keep going. If you quit, I'm going to be very, very cross.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I will not quit. That's not even in my vocabulary. It's more like,
woo-hoo!
How can I, whenever that's kind of one strategy that I've always used. It's like, okay, how can I do this different? How can I make it better? It's always the how. That's the question I always ask myself. So it's never quitting just doesn't even, it's never been in my vocabulary. Like it's not even in my DNA. I don't know how.
I will die before I quit.
I will just claw my way back. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Concept to Cash Flow with Dr. Amy Cannata. Find even more resources and tips on how to create success in life and business at amycannata.com.